Now we can get started. 5 minutes late. Sorry about that. Okay, so thank you for calling in. Let's do a quick roll call. We'll try to start, I guess we'll start at Greenwich Mean Time and move west. So anyone in Europe?
Mm-hmm.
Who is that?
Yes. Yes.
So say your name.
Okay, Werner is from Europe. Werner Pont.
Okay.
I can hear you. Sorry.
So that's Werner. Mm-hmm. Welcome, Werner. Who else is calling in from Europe?
Frank.
Try again.
I'm Imre. Do you hear me?
I hear you, but I didn't understand what you said.
Imre.
Okay. Oh, Imre. How are you doing, Imre? Welcome.
Fine. Thank you.
And I see Chatai is calling in also. All right. Mm-hmm. Anyone else? And there's Bernd calling in. Anyone else from Europe? Okay, moving to the Americas, we have Ed Burns here. Who else?
Mm-hmm. Ken Finnegan.
Hello, Ken.
Neil Griffin.
Hi, Neil.
Hi, Neil.
Everybody.
Ted Goddard, I think you're here too, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm here.
Ted's calling in from Canada.
Oh, time.
And, anyone calling in from Asia or Australia? All right. And we'll just continue to move west. Anyone from calling in from Middle East? All right. Well, we can get started then, officially. So the first thing I wanted to do was thank you all for calling in today, taking the time to call in. And one of the things we've observed over the many years of doing JSF is, like any open source effort, the company that's sponsoring it has their people working on things that are product focused, so my ability to work on JSF is sometimes diverted when I have to work on other things, so I have to put stuff down and come back in. And I see two Chatais in the Google Plus, that's really funny. I have to put stuff down and come back, and as a result, sometimes it's really more helpful if the email list discussion can be very clearly threaded. So I'm just going to ask people, when they're making the email list discussion, try to keep it on topic of the thread that's there. You know, it's natural, of course. For example, when we were starting to talk about the pass-through attributes, that's when someone suggested, I think it was maybe Frank Caputo, who suggested the pass-through element idea. And initially I was like, well, yeah, that's a good idea, but I had a very hard time trying to separate the threads of discussion. So let's try to really double down and keep the discussion focused on the task at hand. And you can open up new threads. That's perfectly fine.
Yeah, okay.
And then, like, for example, this other thing we're doing with skinning, which we'll save for another meeting, or skinning or multi-templating, you know, that also might lend itself to some separation of concerns that might make the email discussion a little easier to follow. So,
yeah.
Does anyone else have anything to add about the topic of email best practices? And part of the reason why I'm doing the video chat here is in talking to various people who are doing distributed work. They've said that the video really helps with the productivity and the accountability. So, you know, it's clear that just doing email only is really difficult. We have a little bit of time set aside for this. Does anyone want to perhaps share some success stories they've had when working in an expert group type situation and how to make it more effective than just email? Because I know we're all, you know,
like when we've had the in-person meetings at the various conferences, that's always worked really well.
Right. Yeah. We didn't do that this year at the Confess conference, but I'm thinking we should do it at Java 1. So I'm going to try to set that up. I know some other companies use video conferencing and distributed tools more extensively than I do. So if anyone has experience that they'd like to share or how we could be more effective, then please either step up here or in email. Or if you don't feel comfortable talking in this forum, you can just contact me directly. But I'm always open to ideas to have more productive expert group discussions and work. Okay?
Okay.
All right, well, let's get down then to the pass-through elements. I'll read the pastebin URL again. We're going to just use this low-tech pastebin for stand-in for screen sharing. I know Google Plus also has screen sharing, but I'm not willing to use it for the purpose of that for various legal and technical reasons. So the pastebin, it's pastebin.mozilla.org, and hold on a second. Oh, Chitai got disconnected. Can you let me in again? Well, hold on a second. I'm just replying to Chitai's email, or to his IM. Alright, so it's pastebin.mozilla.org/1744896. And it's just the 20 lines of text I typed up before this meeting. I wanted to start out by showing what's implemented so far. And to that end, I have two other pastebins containing the XHTML for the demo, the automated test that shows the feature that's implemented so far, and then the rendered HTML. So if you look at the first one there on line 5 of the introductory pastebin, you can see it's just the input.
Can you repeat the number, Ed?
Sure.
Please?
pastebin.mozilla.org/1744896.
Okay.
Does anyone else need me to repeat it? Can everyone see it?
Could you repeat it?
Sure. Pastebin, pastebin.mozilla.org/1744896.
Okay. So I'm being redirected to pastebin.com.
Oh, pastebin.mozilla.org redirects you to pastebin.com. Really? Is anyone else observing that?
What pastebin?
The URL is pastebin, pastebin dot mozilla dot org.
I didn't understand the dot before the dot org. I can hear you really bad.
Oh, really? Okay.
If I talk, then I can't hear you. It's a little bit strange. Maybe I try another telephone.
Well, if you're on the IRC channel, I'll type it in there.
Cool.
IRC as well, okay.
Yeah, we have a lot of different ways. Oops, that's not right.
I don't have an actual IRC client running. I downloaded one.
Now's not the time for doing that if you're not in the channel already. 1744.
It's Mozilla like the browser. Maybe that helps.
Yep.
Okay.
Mozilla.org. All right, well, that said, let's just talk about it. I've got this, if you check out the source, you've got the of Mohair, you've also got the code there too. The file path of the test case is in the test directory. There is a agnostic subdirectory inside there. There is a render kit directory, and inside there is pass-through. And that is the WAR that has source, main, web app, input.xhtml. That's the same file we're looking at there. So I've given a few different ways to get to it, so I think that's enough, and if people can't get it, you'll have to listen to it. So this just shows what we've got implemented so far, and you can say input, and the thing that we discussed so far in the expert group was the presence of one or more of these scoped attributes that are attributes scoped to the java.sun.com/JSF namespace. That will trigger the system identifying this as a pass-through element. And when it does that, it needs to determine some kind of mapping to what component type and renderer type are used. So right now I just have UI input, and I have a special renderer that's been added to the render kit. So if you look at the latest draft of the spec and look at the standard HTML render kit specification, you'll see there's a new renderer type for the component family Java XFaces input. It's called Java XFaces pass-through input, and that describes the decode behavior and the encode behavior. Now, the decode behavior is saying identical to that of the Java XFaces input, Java XFaces text renderer. So what I was going to suggest is, and this is on the agenda that I posted on the pastebin, we make the renderers that handle, we make a small number of renderers that handle the most important decode behavior cases, and these would be somewhat analogous to the behavioral interfaces that we have in Java XFaces component. In other words, we look at what's out there HTML-wise, and we derive the smallest possible set of renderers that make sense to cover the kinds of components that people are going to want to render in these cases. So I think it should be mechanically possible to do that, and that's what I was going to suggest as our discovery path. Does that make sense?
I'd like to ask, if we use the H colon input text, is there a way to list pass-through attributes on that one? Maybe not using such a nice syntax, but to just make it possible.
You're aware, Ted, of the separate pass-through attribute facility. So that gives you the ability to just put arbitrary pass-through attributes on any component.
Okay, I wasn't aware of that. I was just aware of the GSFC syntax
here. Okay. So let me give an overview of that. We had a separate thread of discussion on the expert group, the topic of which originally started as HTML5 is all about these data dash attributes, and how do we provide support for that? So we had a number of different iterations, and we ended up coming up with what we have now. And to see that, you have to go to the overview docs of the RenderKit specification, and then you scroll down to the bottom, and there's a section that says rendering pass-through attributes, and that describes how that works. Now, if you've got the source code handy, I could create another pastebin, or you can look at the source code that shows a few different permutations of this in practice. I'm going to get that right there. It's in the same...
That was not a competing proposal to the GSFC syntax. That was...
Well, we, it's... I would say, if you're going to look at things from... is it similar to JSFC or not? I would say this 1111 pass-through elements thing is a better way to do it than JSFC. Because JSFC was something that was sort of a somewhat completely specified feature in facelets, and we just took whatever minimal specification was in there and sort of grandfathered it into JSF, but we'd really never gave it the proper rigor that it needed to have. So I'm looking at pass-through elements as a successor to JSFC. In other words, JSFC done right. Does that make sense?
Yep.
Okay. So pass-through attributes is a different thing. Sorry, who was going to say something? Someone want to make a comment?
No.
Okay. So does anyone else want me to review what we've done with pass-through attributes? Okay. All right, well then getting, I was trying to keep these two things separate, and I think largely we can keep them separate. So getting back to pass-through elements, of course, the most important thing to decide in this meeting, or even to broach in this meeting, is how do we move it forward? So right now we've just got, support for input. Clearly that's not enough. So I'm hoping someone can help me understand what would be some good next steps.
I think we should...
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Frank. Is that you, Frank?
Yes, it was. I think we should first complete the input and then look further what's next, because I think the input tags are most important for HTML5, because they are the tags having all those nice new attributes.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't understand what is specific at all with the input right now about it.
Let me show you. Do you happen to have the code handy?
I don't actually.
All right. Well, I'll do my best to explain it. What's specific about it is, I'm going to open up the implementation code myself right now. Actually, to remember what it was, I need to look at the issue, because I put the change bundle on the issue, which will show me the source file. Here we are. So it's the Java Server Faces Spec Public 1111 is the issue number. And I did the big commit on this back on probably early July. Let's see what the date was. Yeah, July 11th. So that's actually a pretty good thing to look at. We could just go through this. So if you go to the issue tracker and go to Java Server Faces Spec Public 1111 and look in the work log tab and scroll down to my entry for July 11th, this describes what we have so far. So what I did was I defined a new renderer. This Java X Faces, actually there's a typo in the change bundle. It says markup input, but it's actually changed to Java X Faces pass-through input. This renderer is intended to be used with an arbitrary markup element that ultimately produces a name value pair that will be sent to the server and decoded by the associated Java X Faces component UI input. So what it does is look in the component's attribute map for an entry under the key given by the value of the constant markup renderer local name key. That is so I can get the element name, because I need to have that element name because that's what's going to be passed through. So in this case, it would be input. So that's how the input gets shown up in the rendered output. I'll leave you guys to read it. But I'm trying to answer Ted's question of what is specific to input. Well, I think the main thing is that top line there ultimately produces a name value pair. So most of the HTML elements do end up sending that syntax, just a name value pair that goes in the request. But we don't have support for option and having other things that are nested inside of input. So the different types of input are kind of trickier to specify. Frank, do you agree with that?
Definitely.
Yeah.
So I think the mapping, the direct mapping from the element name to the JFS component is quite difficult.
Uh-huh.
Because it is not a one-to-one mapping as it
right.
was already discussed in the mailing list.
Right.
So there was the idea of using a tag handler to do this, not a tag handler, a tag decorator to do this, and this might be a little bit easier, I think.
Well, can you explain more what you mean about that?
So all you have to do is just transform a tag
mm-hmm.
and create a new one. So you have an input type text, and you create an H input text.
Mm-hmm.
So
let's
I think you can have some simple rules. Straight forward coded down in the tag handler, and then you are done with just transforming tags.
So this would be a different approach to what we've done so far. This would be, let's just establish a static
yeah.
mapping of a bunch
yeah.
of different combinations of markup to existing components that we have. Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Definitely.
Hmm. Well, that is more tractable, and it's more understandable and straightforward, but it doesn't have the flexibility of dealing with whatever new comes into HTML5, since people have mentioned HTML5 isn't itself done yet, and we can debate about how much it's likely to change or what parts are likely to change. But the solution I'm looking at is I was hoping we could build something that would take that into account and be a lot more flexible. So, you know, I really was thinking of what is a JSF component, as it's really something that declares how something is rendered, and it's another part of it is declares how that bit is decoded when the value is sent from the server. So with these pass-through elements, the encoding portion is really, you're trusting the page author to write that, and you want the page author, you want that stuff to just pass straight through. It's a pass-through element, so it's completely acceptable that the page author is going to put whatever kind of markup and arrangement of things on the page that they need to deal with. And then the real challenge, I think, comes mostly on the decode side.
Yeah.
Does anyone else have any opinions on that?
No, that's it.
So I would like, I'm a little hesitant to try to go down the road where we map a bunch of markup to existing H:- type tags, because it doesn't give me the flexibility that I think people are going to want. Does anyone else have a sense for that?
Yes. I think you are right,
mm-hmm.
but I don't see a way to extend it like you implemented it. The pass-through element handler.
Mm-hmm.
So the object that does the decoding could be somehow generic, and I guess they could declare it as a GSF something,
mm-hmm.
GSF colon decoder.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And give the type that you want to use to perform decoding for this particular little bit of markup.
Right. I see.
They would have an ID, and the ID would be known to both.
Right. So this would be perhaps right now, well, from JSF 1.0, the concept of renderer has always kept the two things tightly coupled and in one module. That is, encoding and decoding were done by the same thing. So since this proposal is, in fact, separating the encoding and the decoding, We could extend that separation even further so that you could actually declare and have a set of decoders, right? Is that what you're saying, Ted?
Yep.
That's a good suggestion. I hadn't thought of that. Let me see if I can capture that.
Because it would allow you, because it seems like the rendering aspect is generic.
Mm-hmm.
And you did say that it was decoding that was the problem.
Right.
Who knows whether this is a nice way to write pages.
Mm-hmm. So, really, you could think of it as maybe a decode-only renderer, right? Or a renderer whose encoding is a no-op.
Yeah, because the encoding is defined simply by
the markup.
Piece of markup.
Right. So it wouldn't really have to be a whole new concept. It would just be, okay, this is a renderer that is specified to do no encoding, right?
Okay. Oh, no, I got it.
So initially I was thinking, oh, it's a new concept, but then I thought about it, talked about it some more, and it really is a degenerate case of a renderer.
Yeah, so, you know, from a name perspective, it's a renderer that does not render.
Right, right. Right. and this goes back to...
Well.
This goes back to the naming back at the beginning of JSF 1.0. We knew that the name renderer wasn't quite accurate. Some people wanted to use the term client adapter instead. But renderer won. So that's what we have.
Client adapter is a good term, but it's too long.
Yeah. Yeah, and then, you know, if you'd had, you know, client adapter kit doesn't sound as good as render kit, you know.
Well, could you split it out into two ideas? So, in other words, maybe you have a class that is called decoder,
uh-huh.
or an interface decoder,
uh-huh.
or something like that, and then the renderer would implement decoder or something.
I see.
Like that.
Okay. Well, all right, this is a good suggestion. So, we got two things here. Ted suggested that, because I'm going to capture these notes and send them out to the expert group when we're done. Ted suggested that we
Neil's idea sounds really compatible.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I don't think it would break any of the existing APIs.
It's really just defining a role that we already recognize as part of a renderer.
So I guess in the render kit, you could have two different kinds of elements. You could have renderers that are specified in the render kit,
uh-huh.
and decoders.
Uh-huh. And all renderers are also decoders currently.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And in order to be backward compatible.
Right. Okay. And then I want to also capture Frank's initial suggestion, even though I'm not so keen on pursuing it, but I do want to put it into the record. Perhaps we can... Oh, you know what occurs to me? Maybe we should use Google Docs so people could look at the notes as I'm typing them. So, as I said in the email, this is the first expert group meeting we've done on the phone in a really, really, really long time. So the technology has changed a bit since the last one.
Refresh the piece bin if you have it in the piece bin.
That's true. Yeah, I will do that, actually. All right. Perhaps we can... let's see. I'll capture it this way. Frank Caputo suggested... Now. several people seem to have trouble getting to the paste bin, so I've taken to forgetting about it. There we are. You do get a new number when you do that, though. The new number is 174-5008. And I just added a few lines. It's really not too much to speak of. But okay. Let's see. All right, so that does kind of answer Frank's question, how can we distinguish between things that have different decode behaviors? So, given that we have the concept of having different decoders, how would you... Then you'd have to understand how to choose one, given some arbitrary markup, right?
Yeah.
So that is... So what I was looking at there, if we look at how a render kit is declared in XML, I think we could have some extra information in there. So, in the source code, there is a file called standard HTMLRenderKit.xml. It's in the JSF API directory, JSF API doc, standard HTMLRenderKit. And actually, the file that is the... There's an XML file that is used to generate the standard HTMLRenderKit.xml. That's called standard HTMLRenderKit base.xml. So, I was thinking, as part of, we could expand the XML schema for what is a renderer and have some syntax that lets us declare like maybe a regular expression or some other way to identify that this renderer goes with this kind of markup that comes in, you know? So right now this system currently is hard-coded, where it sees if there is a XML element whose local name is input, then it uses this Java X Faces input, Java X Faces pass through input renderer. But I think
it's
we
like
need
an XPath.
Yes. Well, XPath is a great... Yes. Okay.
Because then you could say that, well, if something matches this XPath, it could use this decoder.
That's a good point. I was thinking something like that would present itself. And in fact, if you look at the standard HTML render kit base.xml, we're already using XPath as a way to do includes, because we do a lot of including in this thing. For example, each renderer has its own set of valid attributes, of course. We've known that from the very beginning. And having that all linearly specified would take a lot of space. So that's why we generate this standard HTML render kit.xml from this base file, which has XPath statements for the attributes, for example. So there's existing knowledge we have in the project already that would be used to help us do this. So,
Ed, do we have to have the trunk of Mohara to see this file?
No.
I have the 2.1 version.
No, you can, this file's been there since 1.0.
Okay, well, I've got it. I've got the 2.1 version open right now. So, you know, can you just tell me something to search for?
Yeah.
So that I can relate with my eyes what you're saying?
Sure. Audibly. So are you in standard HTML render kit base.xml?
I'm in standard HTML render kit.xml.
Oh, alongside that, there should be a dash base file.
Okay. Yep, I got it.
And so just search for any XI colon include. And that's
okay.
That's our existing usage of XPath is done at build time. So this,
I see.
It would be a little bit different, because what Ted is suggesting is this would be something that would actually be there for real. Okay. So Ed asked how to pick a renderer given some incoming markup. Perhaps pardon me for typing as I'm speaking. It's just the only way I can actually accurately capture things. Well, I guess I could just listen to the audio later. Maybe I'll do that. Okay. Yeah, that's what I'll do. So we can use XPath, perhaps. But does that make sense? Like, that we could somehow put this task of defining the mapping and make that a part of the XML RenderKit declaration?
It seems like the kind of easy thing to specify maybe would be an element name and some attributes that have to match.
Uh-huh.
I think you could do that with XPath.
Okay. 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 All right. That's good. All right, some progress there. Now what about Ajax and behaviors? We need to support that, obviously. So here we have a funny kind of thing because there's no... Well, yeah, you'd have this basic HTML native looking markup like I have in the pastebin for this input example. But inside of that, you'd have, you know, you need to be able to support an fcolon Ajax tag there. So, how would we... Would that present any unique challenges, or would that be straightforward to do? Has anyone gotten far enough in thought experiment land to answer that?
So, this would be an fcolon Ajax as a child of the input element?
For example, yes.
Like in the first link you have in the faceless HTML example.
Yep, that's right.
Where you have input JSF colon ID, mm-hmm. input text, so it would be a child of that.
Yes.
Okay, and so what's the difficulty that this...
I don't know if there is any difficulty. It's something that I think we need to make sure works.
I think a bracelet will create a component
actually,
out of that input.
Here's the difficulty. Here is the difficulty. Right now, you can only put an F colon Ajax inside of a component that implements behavior holder. So, all of the standard components do not implement behavior holder. But we took the task of retrofitting the HTML component generation logic so that all of the components that are now in Java X Spaces component HTML do implement a behavior holder. Client behavior holder is the interface. So if you look at the Java doc, you can just look at the package, Java X Spaces component HTML, and everything in there will implement a client behavior holder.
I guess in many cases it could just do its best. It could go on click equals, you know, it would just render an attribute inside the parent tag.
I'm just wondering though if perhaps we should go back again at Frank's initial suggestion and instead of mapping it to an input, map it straight down to one of the components in Java X Spaces component HTML, because then we get the behavior holder of business for free.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, how about mapping the entire FHX functionality into attributes? .jsf attributes.
You mean we'd have special attributes? Instead of enclosing a tag, you would use special attributes for this?
Exactly, yes. That would be closer to the original HTML as well.
Because it turns into attributes ultimately.
That's true.
In most cases.
Well, Werner, how would that look?
I don't have a good idea now, but maybe something like GSF HX, on event and something like that.
Okay.
Well, a set of attributes which basically resemble the functionality which we have in FHX.
Okay. So, basically we would look at what we have in fcolon Ajax. Let me pull up the Java doc for that. Just a second. Faceless tag library docs. projects. And, you know, so we've got disabled, event, execute, immediate, listener, on event, delay. So all of those attributes we could define the ability to put those on one of these pass-through element things. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay. That might be something to consider. But we still need to address the problem programmatically when you try... we still need to address the problem of attaching AJAX.
I think we should, as Frank said, and I suggested on the mailing list, have some sort of configurable or mapping. Any classes, so that you can look at the tag name, the attributes of that tag, and map it to a component or to another tag. It doesn't have to be H, only H tags. It can be your custom tags. The thing is that if we add a lot of special attributes, we are moving far away from normal HTML
exactly.
A designer would code.
That's right.
So, and normally it should be the concern of the developer to do the mapping from normal HTML to something JSF understands.
I understand. That's a good point. And we should always keep in mind to try to keep the HTML authoring experience as pure HTML as possible for this feature. So, yeah. And that might even solve some of the decode problem, too. Because when you have a bunch of HTML and you know that this really is something that functions as a text input, then you know you can decode it as a text input. Right?
That's the point. And I think this is basically HTTP style, and HTTP won't change in the next 10 years, I hope.
Right.
And
no.
I think...
No. Okay.
But I think the decode idea is not bad to write new components quickly. So if you know you have standard output, you just output what you get from the page author, but you want to decode differently, maybe we can add some component where you can attach a decoder.
Right.
By doing the mapping. So you say, okay, I map it to HTML5 output with a decoder, some decoder class.
Right. Okay. Well, I need to...
Sorry, I was thrown out. Have I missed something?
Yeah, actually...
it depends.
We, Imre and Frank came back with, by pointing out that by having a way to map the markup to a concrete component in Java XFaces component HTML, you might get the decoding for free, because when you go that far as to say that this chunk of markup maps to an HTML input text, then you know how to decode that thing. And Imre's point was regarding AJAX, if we go ahead and define some special attributes, the more of that we do, the further away we get from having a pure HTML style authoring experience. And I think that's a good point that we should try to avoid getting so far away from that. So that's something that I...
Yes, definitely. And also it doesn't solve the point of custom behaviors.
Right. Right.
Mm-hmm. It seems like it's good to map to a concrete component whenever you know that would be a valid mapping.
Right.
And then leave the more generic case still possible for
right.
future HTML5 things that don't map to...
Right.
Our components.
That's good. So I did asked some people a long time ago to help me in estimating the complexity of things when it comes to implementation. That didn't work out so well. I wasn't really able to get very good numbers that didn't really map into reality. But back of the napkin kind of question, how hard does this feature seem to do? Does it seem like something we can get figured out, for example, in time for Java 1, to just have something that we can show at Java 1?
I think it's pretty easy to have something that maps arbitrary HTML to text, especially as text decorators exist. Uh-huh. They're just a bit too complicated, I think. Uh-huh. They should be easier to use for this case. Okay. The complicated part is to add default mappings.
You have to make
from selects, from options, uh-huh, etc.
Okay. But I'm actually not too worried about that part. That part I can see pretty clearly.
Okay, and I can see the base pretty clearly.
Okay.
Hey
guys, it's Andy.
Welcome, Andy.
Hey, thanks. Thanks, Ed. Sorry about missing all the meeting. My questions have always been about scope and sort of the use cases, and maybe you guys have already tackled all that. But in the email thread, we initially were focusing on fairly simple like layout type cases, mm-hmm, where the components weren't especially doing anything especially interesting. And so, that seems like it'd be fairly straightforward problem to solve, but then when you start adding complexities of, components that, like command components, components, yep, that have different behaviors, et cetera, then it gets more complicated. So where we left off on the email thread, I still didn't have a good sense of the scope, like the target use cases. Did you guys kind of talk through that already, and do we have a better sense of what we're... how wide we're aiming for this stuff?
We didn't explicitly talk about scope, so I think we should explicitly talk about it. You're right. I think it would be great if we could just establish the base cases. Because the two big ones that I see that you already intimated was the inputs and the command type components.
Right.
If we could solve those, really, I think those are the only two ones we really should focus on initially.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's an even simpler case, which is like no behavior, right? Just like a layout type, panel type situation. It'd be nice for people to be able to, for example, use HTML, an HTML button or an HTML link, but be able to somehow associate that with an action listener.
Right.
Or even go through possibly even through implicit navigation.
Yep.
Preempted navigation. Email discussions, we were focusing on the layout stuff, which was really easy, but I think we need to, take a look, go a little bit further, and... So, for example, a really simple case would be, a button, uh-huh, that's going to invoke an action listener. So, uh-huh, the page author wants to just use an HTML button, uh-huh, style it however they want to style it, and they want to invoke some server-side logic.
Right.
So, a question for us is, in that use case, would you still use EL bindings to invoke your server-side logic, or for example, would you still use? Well, I think when I just joined you guys, maybe we're talking about behaviors like F colon AJAX.
Right.
Or do you want some way to get all of that tag related sort of pollution, I guess, in this world of HTML, out of the HTML document and into kind of some Java code somewhere, backing Dean? I was thinking it might be nice to be able to have some convenient way to kind of push that stuff out into Java code and not have to expose the sort of HTML web designer, page author type people to any JSF tags, including F colon AJAX.
Well, this is the tricky thing, because when you're an HTML author, you care about what causes the post to happen or the get to happen. So, you know, when you're using with one style of development, you know, you're using HTML, the HTML button thing, but you may have some JavaScript that you're always calling that actually does the posting, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, do we want to fit into that authoring style, or do we want to say that, well, because activating the form is something that is so intrinsic to how JSF works, that, you know, you have to do this part of it the JSF way, because there's too much variance.
So, well, maybe we could take just a couple of fairly simple use cases as starting points.
Uh-huh.
You know, the command case, maybe the input case, and try to work through what's the minimal amount of intrusion on the sort of HTML view of the world.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know what the answer is, but I think that's an important thing for us to look at.
I agree, but when I thought about how to do command components before, the variety of ways to actually do that in plain HTML was something I ran into right away. And my gut feeling is, given that there's such variety in how to do that, it's best that we just not try to adapt an HTML idiom to that part of the feature, and just use the existing JSF idioms for that part of the feature.
Okay. I'd like to see if we could push it, but yeah, I haven't thought through.
Well, we'd have to push it somewhat. But you know, we're not going to make it so. Does anyone on the call have a lot of experience with you know, the JavaScript client libraries that people are using out there for doing these kinds of things? Like Node.js, for example?
Somewhat.
I'm using it very heavy because I have a customer who drives a client, a visit to customer website, and this is a heavy Ajax, and we're doing very many things with this JSF Ajax library.
Mm-hmm. So are you using Node?
Node.js?
Mm-hmm.
No, Node.js is for the server, usually.
Alright, well, what is the client thing? I know there's... I'm blanking on the name.
jQuery.
jQuery,
maybe?
I didn't understand. Sorry. It's just a website using... making heavy much use of jQuery and all those fancy effects, and this is where we dive deep into the JSF Ajax library to do funny things with the elements. We have, for example, a thing where we don't render where the JSF Ajax library would render. We have to create a temporary element in the DOM and then render it there. So I'm quite deep into it.
Okay. So,
AngularJS.
What'd you say? AngularJS, right.
Angular.
Right. So,
no, I've never seen it. No.
Uh-huh. But my point, Andy, in bringing that up is there's just a huge amount of variety for how you do action components, right?
Yeah, I mean, so I think for us, like, I think our goal is let a web designer author a button or a link, you know, using whatever markup they want.
Mm-hmm.
But then during the course of rendering that on the server side, we want to be able to instrument the markup to include, for example, the output of an f:Ajax, you know, an f:Ajax script or client behavior script.
Mm-hmm.
We want to be able to insert that into markup that's provided by the web designer, so they have as much control over the markup, you know, as we can possibly give them. But when it comes to doing things like Ajax postbacks, we're still calling into jsf.ajax.request, and we need some, you know, convenient way for an application developer to wire that up to HTML markup that you know, like a web designer's authored.
Right. So my sense again is we should probably admit the fact that the way we've done f:Ajax is easy enough to use to begin with. So we should try to reuse that. You know, we shouldn't say, let's try to magically cook up how this thing should be Ajaxified, but yet we should. Well, that's the thing. The way you've designed, Andy, the client behavior interface, we have all these different implicit Ajaxification things that happen based on the class of the thing. You know, so an input text Ajaxifies itself differently than a command link, right? That's
right, yeah, that's different sort of default events, and,
right.
And they know how to insert the... Yeah, so I guess what I was thinking was, I agree, Ed, like we want to try to leverage the, you know, whatever sort of existing infrastructure we can, but, so, I guess let's look at sort of two different ways that someone might associate this Ajax behavior with HTML5 markup. So you've
right.
got your HTML5 or HTML button element.
Right.
So, okay, so initially, sure, maybe we shove an F colon Ajax tag inside of that, and we're like, we're just happy that the person can use an HTML button element,
right.
and somehow we make F colon Ajax, you know, register itself with the corresponding command button that gets created.
Right.
So, that, I mean, that's fine as a starting point. I think one of the things we might want to think about is, so, what if you can, okay, so I don't love JSF's binding attribute mechanism, but
mm-hmm.
it does give you a way to basically, you know, shove your component in, get access to your component in some Java code. So what if instead of having the F colon Ajax tag sort of polluting the page content, let's say you can shove a binding attribute on the plain old HTML button element, and as a result, that's going to push whatever component we associate with that button into your your managed bean. And now in Java code, as an application developer, you can go and register any client behavior with that command button, for example. So there we've offloaded some more JSF tag content from what was before, a nice HTML page, back into Java code. So I think we should look into that, and I mentioned, like, I'm not a huge fan of the binding attribute because it's a little unwieldy. You know, you have to use EL. People mess up by, you know, choosing the wrong scope for their backing beam,
yep.
and start shoving components and session scope, and it's all
right.
kinds of bad things happen. So for me, as like, and maybe it's not part of 2.2, I don't know, it depends on the scope, but maybe we look at improving the ways that people get access to components in their backing beams so that we can make this use case of HTML5 button, it's got a particular ID, as an application developer, I want to associate an action listener or an Ajax client behavior or do some additional configuration in my Java code. Maybe we add some mechanism to make it easier to get at that, like an annotation on some beam that's associated with that page, and we can, that way the page author doesn't have to even shove EL into the page.
Binding worked just as a callback right. and didn't keep a reference in the bean, then something might be better, because it's
right.
really a bad source of memory leaks.
Yeah, I agree. So, I mean, I don't want to blow this up too much, but I guess what I'm saying is that I think that there is room for this, for us to continue sort of optimizing the experience and for sort of the web designer type use case.
Uh-huh.
Part of that might be pushing some of the component configuration that typically happens in the sort of F colon tag space out into Java code. And, I mean, in some ways, I think that's Wicket is successful at doing that, right? Because you just got your Wicket ID, and then a lot more of the configuration can happen in the corresponding, Java class.
Yeah.
So I think there are things that we can do here to really hit the sweet spot for this use case. And I don't know whether that is something that would fit into 2.2, but
I think it should just be part of the mapping.
Part of the mapping.
We have a mapper. It can add Ajax components. It can add attributes. So, and especially this would be at compile time, which is probably a you want to have a binding, then just write a mapper that will bind this tag component to something you know as a developer.
Right.
And in your mapping, you can just with your designers just agree on let's say the class name.
Mm-hmm.
If the class name is something foobar, then this will be a button that has this and that behavior.
Oh, interesting.
So we should have a very easy way to configure the mapping.
Mm-hmm.
From HTML to probably not only to the DLL but to the component tree.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all, and then we have a very flexible base.
Mm-hmm.
Where everyone can build up on.
Okay.
You can create new fancy mappers. Prime faces can have some mappers which you can build up on. And if we have that as a base, we don't lock us out
mm-hmm.
of any possibilities.
And I think it's a good idea. I like the idea of having this flexible mapping mechanism. It sounds right. You know, right on. I still think we might want to look at ways of doing instance-specific configuration in a way that doesn't include personally, I think that should be done in Java code as opposed to shoving additional sort of bonus attributes or whatever onto an HTML element. But I think we should just sort of look at
the method would be. The mapper would be Java code.
So I guess the question is whether you're... So if I've got a command button, if I've got an HTML button, and now as an application developer, I want to make sure that it's using F colon Ajax, and I want to set a particular execute IDs and render IDs, maybe some other attributes on that, I would be registering. It doesn't feel to me like I would be writing a mapper there.
Let me get a crack at this and see if I understand, because this is something that we talked about before you joined, Andy.
Sure.
The path I've taken does not use this mapping idea that Imre and Frank have suggested, but I'm willing to consider it because it is flexible and it is easier to think about. And Imre or Frank, correct me if I've got it wrong, but the idea is we have some Java code that knows when it sees some markup like input type equals submit, then it knows, aha, well, this thing, treat this thing, let the markup pass through however it is, or let the markup that the user gave me be the thing that gets rendered. But the component that stands in will actually be the same component that I would have gotten if the person had written each colon command button. And furthermore, whatever attributes are valid for that guy are also valid to put on the markup in the page.
Yeah, that's right. This is easy, because if you have this, you have this button tag.
Mm-hmm.
I've already done it for a customer. I just replaced the renderer, and it was a UI command button.
Mm-hmm.
So it's already there. All the behavior is there you mm-hmm. need for the HTML5 thing.
Mm-hmm.
So just reuse it. I think mm-hmm. it's more easy.
Yeah.
To really use it.
I'm starting to see that it's more easy too, and it does have a lot of benefits.
So it's the idea that you'd be mapping, like, so there's a really simple example, I think, that that we can all kind of understand. So in HTML, there's just class attribute, right?
Mm-hmm.
In JSF, I think we ended up using style class.
Right, we had to.
So,
right.
Yeah. So is the idea that the mapper would basically translate class attribute and the HTML button element into a style class attribute, for example, right? Is that the sort of thing that this mapper is doing?
I think it should, yes.
this mapper can inspect the attributes, the tag attributes, can inspect the tag name,
uh-huh.
personally, it really good would be if we could inspect, and I think tech decorators can do that, can inspect parents and children. And it's just then up to the mapper to specify what component to use to add children to the component. It's kind of like Java coded XSLT on the HTML.
Right. So it's translating, it's mapping from the sort of HTML set of attributes to some other component centric set of attributes.
Not only attributes, you can add components, or it's really like transferring HTML by XSLT to facelift syntax.
Okay.
Because XSLT is something nobody can use really good.
Yeah.
You should have Java. It's a lot easier to do it.
Did you think is it actually performing like text translations of the tag content or is it configuring a JSF component? Is it a transformation of the content?
We should think about that, how to do that. I have no idea yet.
Okay.
As far as I know, the facelift tech decorator just replaced the tech name. Which is not sufficient for us. It's not flexible enough.
But you can. I think you can also change the attribute list with the tech decorator.
Okay.
And then you have it, huh? No?
Well, yes, all that information is there, because I was having to mess with that to do the prototype that we've got so far. So I think I have a feel for what would be needed. But I want to make sure I get this right, because this mapping thing is... One thing we discussed earlier was letting the markup in the page map to a concrete UI component. And therefore also, you know, our render would be there. Now, this idea is rather having one bit of markup on the page that maps to a facelit tag. Is that right?
That's an option.
Yes.
It might be easier for the author of mappers.
You're saying that this would be a compile time, right? Is that facelit compile time you're going to be doing this transformation?
Right. I think that's the best time to do it, because you only do it, have to do it once.
Yeah. Well, in any case, I mean, I think that sounds like something we should look at. I still think that there are going to be sort of instance-specific component configurations that we'll want to make we shouldn't be asking people to write a mapper, but maybe provide a sort of more convenient way to get at the Java component class and do things like add behaviors or register listeners and whatnot. So I think there's sort of two different areas that we can focus on to improve.
I'd like to see if we can separate.
My idea is that if you have,
Go ahead.
If we have mappers, uh-huh. You can build any infrastructure on top of it, like having text files that specify some sort of mapping, which configure mappers. You don't have to write a mapper, but at the end, it would be mappers that are used to do the transformation.
Yeah, but I still think that, like, for things like, okay, for this particular button, I want to set, you know, an execute list and a render list. I see that more sort of fitting into, like, the existing component binding mechanism than something that happens during facelift compilation, but I could be wrong. I don't know. I'll have to look at it.
But if you map to existing components, you already have those Ajax things, all this render list and whatever you want, the uh-huh. execute list, it's all there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm having a hard time picturing it, but, well, maybe as we dig into it some more, I'll get it.
Okay. Well, we got to wrap it up, but there's a lot to think about on this. Does anyone have some time to get together with me outside of this and try to move this forward on an individual basis? Because it's very helpful if someone can step up and say, okay, I'm willing to really get down there and try to help prototype this. I understand if you don't, because this is a volunteer effort thing.
And I'm interested, although I'm a little time constrained as usual at the moment.
A little, yes, we all are. Right.
Yeah, sorry. So I probably in the near future, next week or two, I don't think I'm especially available to help as much as I would like. Sorry.
All right. Well, you can reach out if anyone wants to. You can reach out to me. But that's just something.
So, I'd like to add with a few hours. I can do so. So doing a rapid prototype. Just let's do it, and because someone has to do it.
Frank, that would be cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm gonna take these. I'm gonna listen to the audio, try to derive some notes, and then send it out to the expert group. And maybe we could try to do another one of these in a couple weeks. We can't do them too often because they're very expensive. Not dollar cost in terms of infrastructure, but just in terms of everyone's time. So, but it is helpful, and especially if we're able to really start making some progress and move it forward. But thank you everyone for calling in.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
I'll look forward to the email to the expert group. Thanks everyone.
Bye. Okay, bye.
Bye.